meeting on Thursday, July 10th, 2014, 5:30 p.m. I'd like to call to order and finish the form.
Chairperson Block?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Darney?
Here.
Member Dickey? Member Drews?
Here.
Member Hayes?
Here.
Member Smith? Member Spolda?
Here.
Quorum's present.
Great, thank you. On to item number B, public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Historic Resources Commission, including any matter that is not specifically on the agenda as an action item. Do we have any public comment at this point in time? We don't have any public comment, so on to item number C, action on approval of the minutes. Has everybody read the minutes and someone would like to make a motion?
Move to approve the minutes of Thursday, May 8, 2014 as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries. On to item D, modification of agenda.
Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. The public body may combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and the public body may remove an item from an agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. Do we have any modification to the agenda?
No modifications.
Okay. Item number E, disclosures. Any member of the commission may wish to explain any contact with an applicant or the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the commission. Do we have any disclosures?
Yeah, I met with Susan and CHPO representatives as well as Public Works on item F6 a couple weeks ago to discuss CHPO's recommendations and a plan of attack for Public Works.
Great. Even more disclosures. Okay, on to item F, public hearing matters. Item F1, HRC-14-053, possible action.
Sorry. Public hearing matters F1 HRC-14-053 for possible action to approve a request from Betty Brinson, property owner Betty Brinson, for a previously constructed front yard picket fence on property zone single family 6000 SF6 located at 704 West Caroline Street, APN 003-272-06. Susan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Susan Dorpansky, planning manager. This fence was brought to staff's attention by, through a complaint through our code enforcement office. The complaint came in that the fence had been constructed without HRC approval and that it was on the property, not on the property line, but on the, in the, within the right-of-way. So this property is located on the corner of Elizabeth Street and West Caroline. It is... the fence you can see here in this photo is a typical picket fence. They're relatively common in the district. The construction seems to be sound. However, you'll note that the fence itself is constructed all the way to the back of curb. And the right-of-way in this area is 66 feet wide. So the right-of-way actually extends pretty far into the property. I believe it's at least 5 feet. So staff has reviewed the proposal from Betty Brinson, and she has obviously put an application in. We don't have a problem with the fence construction itself. It meets the general guidelines of the district. However, we are requiring that the fence be moved out of the right-of-way and back to the property line. And the original conditions of approval, the deadline to do that was August 11th. Mrs. Brinson has contacted our Public Works Department today and requested an extension, which they granted to, I believe it's August 31st. So in your motion, should you choose to approve, if you could please update that to August 31st, that'd be great. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Is the applicant here?
Yes, the applicant is here to answer questions as well.
Would you like to come up and state your name and give us what's going on, please?
Thank you.
I'm Betty Brinson, 704 West Caroline, but my mailing address is not that address. The planning department has said that portions of my little picket fence are on the right-of-way property. I need them to explain which portions are a problem. Also, were they taking the measurements from when the railroad used to run through my property? I've owned the property 40 years, and city planning never needed to build sidewalks before. So why are portions of my property are needed by August 11th for fence to be torn down or moved back are not understandable to me. I only tried to improve the looks of my home. If you'll look at the two pictures submitted of the yards, and there are two of them, that I have done a lot previous to moving in. And I haven't even painted the fence yet. There were many reasons why the fence was built. And the first reason was to hold back the white rock covering the grass. And when the fence is removed or put back, the rocks will go into the street. And I have no control over that if you take the fence away. Next, to deter deer from eating my flowers and shrubbery, and we all know deer can jump a 6-9 whatever size fence, they just kind of look at it and go around it now. And third, I thought Carson City would appreciate my saving watering three lawns, the front, the side yard, and the backyard. That's three yards that I will not have to water now. And in conclusion, I will remove the fence when I know what portions are to be removed by the city. I cannot move it back where it would take up half of my yard. And yes, I did call today to planning to ask that an extension of August 11th, and they thought August 30th would be good. However, the fence cost me over $1,000. I cannot move it back. I am on Social Security. And I just wondered why they couldn't wait until sidewalks are planned to be put in. Who's in such a hurry anyway for this fence to be taken down because it hasn't even been painted yet? That's about all I've got to say. Thank you. Everybody's in a hurry but me to take it down.
Certainly. Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Do we have any questions for Susan or the applicant?
Susan, it seems to me that the moving of the fence back to the property line is not what we're discussing here as far as this committee, but rather the style and type of fence that is there.
In part, but it is a condition of approval that she move it back to the right of way.
The planning department wants this, and they're in a hurry. And I've owned it 40 years, and they've not been in a hurry since. And if I do remove it, nothing's going to keep that rock from going into the street. I don't know whose problem that's going to be then. I wish not to own it. The problem.
Well, unfortunately, living in a city, we do have to abide by.
I've been here for 55 years and owned three businesses.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate you coming here. And I, too, have been here 50 years.
May I say you don't look it.
but it's not being pushback or moved because of sidewalks or anything like that, because obviously none of this had sidewalks in it when it was originally built.
Who measured the portions that they are talking about? The portions, and I don't know what the portions mean. Well, in the letter.
And that's it. The people that designed this, and it hasn't been changed in a number of years, are probably gone, long gone, but we still have to adhere unless we go through a special use permit, unless we go in front of the planning. There's a whole lot of things that have to change for the right-of-ways to be changed at all. And I know that if I pull up next to it on the sidewalk, a passenger can't get out. That's part of why these things are. But right here, we need to determine... I think Rob is right. If the building materials are correct that they're using, we can approve that, but part of the condition of approval also is by the planning division, so we have to...
I cannot move it over. I will have to tear it down. It would take up over half of my yard. Over half. Past the Christmas tree.
To answer your question about the measurement, typically in this area, which is in our report here from the staff, is that the right-of-way of the streets from property line to property line is 66 feet, and that's common throughout the whole city, and that's been 150 years.
If you'll look across
the
street,
map.
Everybody has their rocks and their whatever and their whatever all the way
to
the curb.
Well, the rocks and such aren't the problem.
I understand that. Just because I tried to hold my rocks back out of the street, somebody's got a problem.
The problem we have is that none of that really matters. What matters is a built fence. And if it's in the right of way, the planning department has the right to say it has to move back. And we're here to just approve the fact that your fence is the right material, is the right height, is the right type.
When do
so
they
when
plan?
Move it, it'll be acceptable.
I plan to, but I'm asking when do they plan to move or to put in sidewalks for me so that grass won't build right there? I can't mow out there. That's not possible. You can't get a lawnmower out there.
Question for you. Who does take care of the landscaping of the rights of way throughout the city as far as, in general?
So the property owners are responsible for the landscaping and the right of way?
Watch it. You asked me to move. Remember?
I understand, Betty. However, the right of way is not your property.
Have you looked at my architectural plans?
The right-of-way is owned by the city of Carson City. The right-of-way. You are not to construct improvements within the right-of-way without permission from the city, which you do not have.
I don't know exactly where the right-of-way is because my architectural plans seem to say that's my yard.
Well, I can tell you the right-of-way is from the center of the street. It's 33 feet each side of the center of the street throughout the Hill Historic District. So I cannot build a fence within that right-of-way. Nobody else in the district can.
From the middle of the street, 33 feet.
Correct, each side. So it's probably going to go from the curb to the inside maybe 5 feet, and it might be on the other side of your tree. It might not be on the other side of your tree. But right-of-ways and things like that are for fire, public safety, health, and that's why these codes are in place. And the problem is I would like to be able to build whatever I want to, but I have to go through the city, and I have to go through the permit process, and I also have to have a fence company, I think, should have helped you out and said, we need to get a permit to do this. And how they did that, I wish they would all do that, and unfortunately they don't. But unfortunately, and in this case, unfortunately, it falls on the property owner to bear the expense for constructing something that was done without approval onto city right-of-way that wasn't back from our property lines. And so we have no control over that. We cannot change any of that. We're talking about your building materials, and the city is requiring that fence goes back to the right-of-way.
Even across the street, they don't know this. They don't know. I happen to be a college graduate, and I don't know it and didn't know it. And I lived with an engineer for approximately 18 years before he died. So I didn't even know it, and neither did he. And our grass was built all the way up to and so is everybody's grass.
grass doesn't get
I know,
destructive.
It's not the
it's
same,
under,
is it?
It's not, no, it's apples and oranges. But right here we've got an improved structure, if you will. It's a structural fence. It's there. It's on the inside of the city right-of-way. The city requires, through the permit process, had that happened, they would have informed you about all of this stuff. And you're right, everybody doesn't know until they go to the building department, they go to the planning department and find out what's required before I build a structure, a fence, anything like that.
Maybe
you know, I understand that you want to keep the gravel back, and maybe a 2x4 berm can do that. But at the same token, what we are here is to approve the materials, and the city has to enforce our laws, our ordinances, and everything else.
Can a little bit of the fence be left up? I'm talking about a pinch to keep the rock from going out into the street. If we were to cut it, leaving a pinch up, there's a great big driveway for a city fire and city officials to get in. It's double driveway.
That's not anything that's under our purview. You could probably go to the Planning Commission to get a variance or get a special use permit to do that potentially, but that would be something that you would need to talk to about the city, because we have no control over, 6 or 8 inches to keep rocks and things like that.
Because I don't know what to do. Yeah, I understand they want it removed, and I understand I don't mind removing it if that is what they want to do, even though it cost me $1,000 and it'll probably cost another $1,000 to get it removed. But I don't know why they need it in a hurry. I don't know why there's a problem. Everybody came over saying how beautiful it looked. I haven't even got it painted yet before there's a complaint.
Can I just make one? Let me make one comment. I have a home in the historic district. It's never had sidewalks. The picket fence I have is set well back from the curb, because people still walk in that. It's a grassy area, but the public can walk in that area as if there were a sidewalk. There is not one, but they still use it as a walkway, and they have the right to do that because it's not my property. I have grass on there. I cut it, but it's not my property, and my picket fence is set back to a line where it is my property. And that's the point. You have to have your fence on your property, not on the city.
Well, what if the architectural design shows that that's mine, and they don't even seem to know when they said portions of it have to be moved back? I don't know what portions they're talking about, the planning department.
Well, somebody can determine for sure where that property line is, but it's perhaps well back. You see that first little line in your driveway? Maybe back to that little line, all the way down as if there were a sidewalk. There's not, but there's this space between the curb and your property that is a public right-of-way. People can walk, have a right to walk there, and you've blocked it in this way because you go all the way to the curb, and that's not your property, that part.
Certainly.
Ms. Brinson, this all could have been avoided people in the historic district, for the most part,
I've owned it 40 years.
Know that they're required to bring construction projects to our review. If you had brought this to the planning department before you constructed that fence, they would have said, there's an issue with the property line. You cannot construct it here. You could have avoided all this. The public works department would have worked with planning to show you where your property line is. You could have constructed it that way. It didn't happen that way. Now we have it constructed within the property line. There's all kinds of issues.
I've owned the home.
It comes down to whether you want to keep
years,
it or not.
40 years I've owned it. And
Betty,
I don't mind moving it.
Okay.
Well,
but that's
ready to make a motion if you'd like. And
absolutely. Susan, did you have some comments?
Just to clarify, the right-of-way has been that width since the 1800s when the city
1800s?
Was, yes, when the city was first
I'm not even that old.
Being developed. And it's very common throughout the historic district that this 66-foot right-of-way exists. It is very wide in comparison to newer right-of-ways in the city. However, that is what we currently deal with in many parts of the historic district. I will note that if you would like to pursue having that become your property, you can come and put an application in for a right-of-way abandonment through the Planning Division, and that would go to the Planning Commission and also the Board of Supervisors for approval, where you would get that right-of-way back and it would become a part of your property. But they would, Public Works would need to agree to that. So that is an option you can consider.
So I'm to go to Public Works and do that?
You can go to the Planning Division and do that.
With my architectural plans showing I own the property.
You do not own the property. You do not own the right-of-way. The right-of-way is not your property. You may own a portion of the property that is up against the right-of-way, but you do not own the right-of-way.
What if the right-of-way is out in the street due to the fact that you folks said portions of it?
The right-of-way is not only in the street. The right-of-way is 66 feet wide, including and encompassing the entire street, plus portions that are outside of the actual street that you see and drive on every day.
Thank you.
So, it is difficult. And the Historic District was formed in, 1982, and there were ways to opt out. And, of course, you can get your property line surveyed. It's going to cost probably $1,500. Susan, I'm sure that getting a right-of-way abandonment, that there's some sort of fee involved as that as well. So to pursue it, to claim that as your property or say it's your property, to find out if it's your property, to find out where city right-of-way is, it's going to cost you well more than it will cost to move the fence. And that's based on my experience, and that's kind of what's going to happen. So at this point, we know you've been there 40 years. You've been in town for 40 years. We know that you've covered up the grass. We know that you're retaining the gravel. We understand all that, but the fact of the matter is, approval doesn't come before us or the city, the planning department, and had you gone in front of them with an application, you would have found out about this before you expended $1,000. So that's where we are. So we have to kind of come up with a solution. And now there's a couple of solutions. You can move the fence back of where the right-of-way is, and the city can tell you
where it is.
Or you can ask for an abandonment of the right-of-way to claim that as your property. And, of course, your property taxes are going to go up as well. So there's a whole litany of stuff, but you can do a number of things. So
I'll just take it down to save everybody concerned. But as I leave this podium, I want to tell you, everybody up at the governor's mansion has commented how very nice it looks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Betty. Thank you very much, Betty. Do we have any public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to entertain a motion.
I move to approve HRC 14-053, request from property owner Betty Brinson to allow a previously constructed front yard picket fence, which must be relocated on or within the property lines on property zoned single family 6000, located at 704 West Caroline Street, APN 003-272-06, based on the findings and conditions of approval outlined in the staff report, the standards and guidelines for rehabilitation, Carson City Historic District guidelines, and consistent with Historic Resources Commission policies, with the modification of condition of approval number 6 to be extended to August 31st, 2014.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, do we have a second?
I just wanted to state for the record that the fence design did not meet our standards and guidelines.
And do we have a second?
Second.
All right, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. Betty, thank you very much for coming today. We really appreciate that. Item F2, HRC-14-054 for possible action to approve a request from RCM Realty Group, property owner DSC number 4 LLC, to install new signage on the exterior building walls facing Nevada Street and Spear Street on properties owned residential office, RO, located at 503 North Nevada Street, APN 003-222-05. Susan.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is an application for signage on the property located at 503 North Nevada Street. It's located at the corner of North Nevada and West Spear. The applicant is proposing to locate one sign on both the west side of the building and also the south side of the building. And so this is the picture of what the west side of the building looks like currently, and then a picture of the south side of the building. And this is currently offices. I believe at a point in the past it was apartments, but it has been converted to offices. The sign that the applicant's proposing on the front or the west side of the building is, as you see here in the slide, relatively small, 25 inches wide by 16 inches high, with a wrought iron metal hanger. And it would hang out, it would extend out from the building. And then the same exact sign would be on the south side of the building, where it would be just adhered, affixed specifically to the building. These are the only signs that are proposed, and they do meet both the historic district sign guidelines as well as Carson City Development Standards Division 4 signs. And I can answer any questions. The applicant is also here to help answer questions as well.
Can the applicant come forward? And Heidi, you've grown a little bit. State your name for the record, please.
Mark Turner for the record. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to entertain them.
Well, it looks like the only questions have to do with engineering. I mean, it's a nice-looking sign from my perspective, but the engineering comments about the need for an encroachment permit if it's hanging over the right-of-way, and the one that's jutting out, the one against the building, I presume, creates no issues. And it has to be at least, 8 feet above? The bottom of the sign has to be 8 feet above.
Yeah, there's some specific height
requirements. That sort of thing. But so rules that are actually not our bailiwick per se.
Susan, that's something covered by planning.
It is, yeah. So those are conditions of approval recommended by both my staff and also by engineering staff related to the signage. And they're based on the standards in our design guidelines for signage.
Any other questions?
The one sign that's hanging out will meet that determination of 8 feet from the ground then?
Right, so it would just need to be up high enough so it has an 8 foot clearance below it so that people walking underneath it wouldn't be at risk of hitting their heads.
I like the curlicue thing. I think that fits our district. Thanks, Mark. Do we have any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'd like to entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to move to approve HRC 14-054, a request from RCM Realty Group, property owner DSE number 4 LLC, to install new signage on the exterior building walls facing the Vaz Street and Spear Street on properties on residential office located at 503 North Nevada Street, APN 003-222-05. Based on the findings and conditions of approval outlined in the staff report, the standard guidelines for rehabilitation, Carson City Historic District guidelines, and consistent with Historic Resource Commission policies.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any comments or any questions on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. Thanks for coming, Mark. Item F3 and F4, I am the property owner of both of those, so Mr. Darney, there's the gavel, and I'll be at your mercy. I get to be public.
Okay, we move to item F3, a request for approval for historic tax deferment status on property zoned downtown mixed use, located at 112 North Curry Street, APN 003-21502. Applicant is Jed Block. And Jed, you have the floor.
Okay, great. For the record, my name is Jed Block. I've got some cool little pictures to show everybody here. I've had a few issues over the years with this building. Of course, going through the historic records, I've determined that some of the history a little bit from these reports might be a little bit different than what I've come up with. But it was built in 1867 by Theodore Winters, 5 years after he built Winters Ranch. I believe that the front portion of the building, that roof looks great from aerial, the front portion of the center part of the building, I believe, is the original building. I have a picture of it from 1871. And there was a front porch that wrapped around down to the side to the ice house in the back. Found a piece of wainscot inside, and it was dated about 1886. And I think that's when the remodel came and they added the front portion and the little back part that sticks out. What was left of the front porch is now on the rear. I bought the property, I guess it's 2003. I was the last one on the 50-50 curb and concrete program, so all the sidewalk all the way around was redone, and that cost me about $1,300, which, I mean, it was a real bargain until the city had to take that. I planted the 4 maple trees on Muster Street, took out the trees that, if you look, this picture, it says Sunset Wedding Chapel, 1982. You can see where they topped all the trees. And I guess I should go back. The hazy picture that shows the three people on the front porch, we think that was taken about 1900. And if you look at the roof, that roof there is cut cedar, and it was painted red for 80 years. I actually have a piece in my office. But if you look really close to the front porch, you can make out a cresting and kind of a finial at the front of it. That finial is replicated on the baseboards inside the building. So my ultimate goal is to return back to this look. If you look in the corbels in the front porch, you can see post and ball. And one of the corbels is missing. I've been trying to get a woodworker to do that for 5 years or more. But you can also see on the roof line, there's another cresting that goes all the way around. So my ultimate goal is to re-roof it and to put that cresting back up. And so if you look at the other two pictures, if you notice the hat on top of the bay window, it's significantly different. In this old picture, it looks like the cresting might have been on the top, but it's about half the height. When the Sunset Wedding Chapel, I think that was the Glory Temple Church, was there from 59 to 88, they cut that original hat off, and they dropped the other hat on there with the cross on it, and it's held on by 6 metal straps. So eventually, I will be coming in front of this board to redo that back to the original, and it is cut cedar, but the city requires an asbestos abatement sample from that, and I do have that. That was another $400. I put about $250,000 into the building. 4 years ago, we got into the basement. Somebody hand-dug a basement probably 30 years ago. There were railroad ties. There were the metal rails from something. I don't know how they got them underneath there, but working with Dick Whiffley and Wayne Reed and Kevin Gaddis, we stabilized the building. That was $35,000 under the ground that you didn't even see. And then, of course, the water line ruptured after that. And then last year on the garage and the ice house, we re-roofed that because they were both leaking and they weren't really done very well. So there's a few things I want to ask about this because there's a couple conditions. One is to get the roof repaired. I've talked to 5 roofing companies over the last 10 years to repair what's there. And mind you, the roof doesn't leak. Just to repair that asbestos that's been put over the top. And they say, well, we'll replace the roof. So after 5 people looked at that, I went to Don James Roofing because I trust their work. And to replace that roof is $17,000, plus the cresting that I will put on the, back on the top. And that's not even counting rebuilding the hat that you see there. The original red roof is under that red asbestos roof. And if you look at the Olkovich Myers house, the opposite corner, it has the same roof except it's green. If you look in this picture, it looks like the 1982 picture. It doesn't look like it's painted at that point in time. Well, it probably is because the hat was painted. And you can see this other wedding chapel picture. So the paint when I bought the building looked good for a year before it started peeling. I finally got somebody up there to pressure wash it, and, of course, they weren't real gentle with the pressure wash hose on the ridge cap there. And that's what it looks like. The paint just isn't designed to adhere to that. And so it is the ugliest roof in town, I believe. I'm going to take some pride in that. because I until it leaks, I can't justify spending money until it leaks or really needs to be replaced. So that's what I've gone through on the roof. The south side of the building was repainted by Mastercraft last year. They are starting on August 1st to repaint the east side that we see here, the front side, and also the north side of the building. It's just, of course, the old paint on there adhered, and everything over the top of it just likes to peel off. So that's going to be painted. My other thing is I look at my sandstone foundation, and it is cut sandstone, but it's pretty rudimentary how they cut it. If you look over, which you don't see in this picture, at the sandstone foundation of the Wrinkle Mansion, it's a cut stone, and it's really, really pretty cool. So after hearing John Lambert from Abstract Masonry talk about the Bury Art Center and painting masonry and brick and things like that, I don't know if it's in my best interest to paint it. I've been kind of letting nature take its course, how to remove it. And over the years, I think it's been repaired somewhat with Portland cement, which we know isn't real good for the sandstone. But I put a little bit of gray right there where you can see it by the front steps of the trim color, and I can go ahead and paint it because over on the, the north side, before we stabilize it, you can see where the foundation was pushing out a little bit, and there was some red brick and things like that. And the other, the one option on the north side is to flash it all the way down and remove a layer or one piece of siding and just do metal flashing, but to control any problems that there could be. So I'm looking at suggestions for the roof and the foundation, if I should paint it or if I should try to chemically strip it. And I think if I chemically strip it, there's a problem there because it's a commercial building or it's in the commercial area. And even though I'm the property owner, I would have to, my understanding, contract to have somebody remove that. And it's my understanding, I think I can paint it myself. But
I'll answer a couple of questions. I think we talked earlier about this briefly, that you've already had it sprayed, so power washing it probably will damage the roof further now than it had been the first try. You said you're going to probably replace this at some point down the road when time and money line up and stars and all that.
The leaks start.
Would you be opposed to just simply repainting it for now until that time occurs so that it's visually acceptable to everyone concerned?
From my past experience, I could guarantee that the paint will look good for maybe 2 years.
Well, it's also probably they didn't use the right type of paint the first time around, so you would probably have a better luck with the second time.
I had Jimmy Johnson, and he was with a roof coating company, and they looked at it and basically said it's gonna be $2,500, and we can't guarantee. And that's a gamble. I mean, we've got stuff up there. It's a concrete product that's got asbestos in it. Replacing the shingles, apparently nobody wants to touch it, or I haven't found that company that was willing to do that.
Yeah, there's quite a few around that will do that. There, a lot of them do historical renovation work, so that I don't think you'll have any trouble repairing the shingles. I went and looked at it briefly, and the damages are, I think they're fairly simply fixed. They're like the trim lay on the roof there. There's some of those shingles have to be re-nailed or replaced, but. All in all, the roof's not in that bad of shape. It's just ugly.
Just ugly. Okay.
Any commissioners' comments?
The issue I see, Jed, is that the place still needs some work, and you are mm-hmm. going to do that. The second condition we have is it has to be in good repair.
Okay.
And at this point, we've got peeling paint, we have shingles missing, and it's not. We had an applicant our last meeting that applied for an open space deferment. Their picket fence was starting to fall down, and as a condition, we said fix it and we'll grant it. So it's, you know, you're not meeting one of the conditions for us.
Okay.
For us to approve it this way, I don't think it's consistent with our policies, unless you're willing to take some steps to bring it into a little bit better repair.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Can I paint it red? If we paint it red, I mean, I can show you I can bring a piece of the original red roof. I've got the original color. But maybe if it's painted red and it peels or flakes and doesn't look so good, it won't be so noticeable because it will still be red.
I think red is the best option since that's
I agree
what
with
we
that.
Were looking at.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to mention, this one that has the brown hat and the white roof, if you look on the side door, there's a roof over the top of it. That blew down about 25 years ago. And that's caused a whole drainage problem, but that's something else that I'm eventually going to add back on. I mean, just so
are you talking about the little roof on the south side there in the corner?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was actually a screen door in there. So what I would need to do, and of course Mastercraft is going to finish the painting probably in the first week of August on the building. And so I can talk to Jay over there about painting the roof, because I think that painting the roof is going to be substantially less than re-roofing it, obviously. And if it's red, you only look at this stuff for years and years and years, and it never occurs to you maybe if you painted it red again. And would I need to, I wouldn't get a, need to get approval from us, from this commission, on the color. Would I need that from city? Okay. And so, okay, well, we'll just, I'll go about that.
I think it's going to buy the time you're going to need to, and when you decide to redo the roof. You know, you'd probably get a good 5 years before you'd have to maybe think about even touching the paint up.
Yeah. And if you look at the cresting of this picture, Ron Machado actually brought me this picture about 1900. I can't find a cresting that matches that, and maybe the cresting doesn't necessarily need to match that, being that it's 100 years later. But I would like to go back to that era.
And you of course, you can get that stuff custom laser cut now in any pattern you want.
How's the cost?
Is it a per foot thing? Then contact any welder. Usually they have the plasma cutters that can mimic all these. They're craftsmen now at that stuff, and they reproduce a lot of historical stuff just right off the shelf based on plasma cutting. So,
hey, cool.
You could find a design. You could get a length, lineal thing cut out of a flat piece of iron.
Okay, so let me just make sure I'm clear. Paint the roof. What should I do with the foundation? Do you think it would be a good idea just to paint it?
I'd leave the foundation alone for right now. It's let the paint that's on there finish peeling off.
Okay.
And then probably seal it rather than put paint back on it again. I mean, at some point you may want to flash between the siding and the top of that foundation just to keep water off.
And that's only on the north side.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of existing conditions and maintaining the property, I think the best thing to do with that is leave them alone.
Okay, so leave that alone. We'll paint the hat, we'll paint the roof, and we'll paint get the sign painted. And
yes.
So I'll just put this application in probably in a few months because it'll probably be for the 14-15 tax year, correct, Susan? It would be...
No, actually, because
I mean,
you...
15-16 is
no,
what I mean.
It'll be for this year.
Okay.
Because you had submitted the application before June 1st.
Okay.
Just because we're hearing it after July 1st doesn't mean that you're not eligible. I talked with the assessor's office about that.
Okay.
So what will happen now is after this is approved at this level, it'll go to the board at their August 7th meeting. And at that time, they can approve this, and then they will also, we will have a recommendation from the assessor's office to make a modification to the tax roll for your property to retroactively credit you for the first part of July.
Okay.
So it will be for 14-15.
Okay. So paint the roof, paint the, get the peeling stuff, because I've been on these guys as well.
I have one more question for you. Is the little foundation curb around the fence, that's concrete, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I think that's probably the only, other than the Capitol, the only metal fence that was put up before 1900. And it is, there's the cap over on the north, or over on the northwest side, the cap's coming off, but there's the posts go down in the concrete about this far. They're probably a 1-inch square, and then they have a flange that's about this big that's on it with U-clamps that they put and set it in the concrete. I mean, there's nothing unstable about the fence, but would that be I had some guys lined up to paint it, and of course, another one of those people that have big high hopes and they don't come back, but I do have black paint. I could paint it. Eventually I want to remove all that and take it apart piece by piece and have it all powder coated in like a flat black or a semi-gloss black, so it's back to the way it should be. And I do have a few extra pieces in the garage as well that came with the property.
Any other comments?
I just want to say you've done, it's a remarkable property, and your efforts there, even though some of them can't be seen, it's great that you're working on it as hard as you are.
Well, that's part of the joy of this, right? You sink money into it that you can't even see. And the basement looked like a scene from Silence of the Lambs, but it's all cleaned up now, and it's not going to fall in. Okay.
Public comments? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I move to approve HRC-14-040, a request from Jed Block, property owner, Curry, Musser, Proctor, and Green, LLC, for historic tax deferment on property zoned downtown mixed use, located at 112 North Curry Street, APN 003-215-02, with the conditions of approval as outlined in the staff report, with a modification to condition number 2, that the paint on the concrete foundation concrete foundation of the structure and concrete foundation of the fence be left alone so that the materials can be removed on their own. Based on the finding that the property is in general conformance with the Secretary of Interior standards and guidelines for rehabilitation, Carson City Historic District guidelines, and with the Historic Resources Commission policies.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Before you make the motion, and that's totally fine. But I just, one of the questions I got at the board at the last tax deferment was, what's the time frame on the repairs? And we didn't set a date on the last one, so that may be something to consider. I don't know how you want to handle that, but
I'm thinking like 60 days. Is that reasonable?
It is for the north side. I don't know about the roof. I'll have to talk to them and get scheduled. But
can we do a condition where the deferment takes effect when the repairs are done?
It would be, so once the deferment goes into effect, it would be for the whole year. So.
Well, let's make it 90 days then.
Well, either way, the incentive is to get the tax deferment so I have saved money. So.
Right.
So that would get you through till early fall.
For how many days, Rob?
90 days? 3 months?
Yes.
It'd be want to be done by then anyway.
I hope so.
Okay.
I'll amend my motion to put a date at 90 days on the improvement.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by aye.
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 All those opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. Thank you, Jed. On to the next Jed item of item F4. Get my glasses on. Yep.
I got a red roof.
Request for approval for historical tax deferment status on properties on single family 6000 located at 602 West Spear Street, APN 003-243-04. Jed, it's yours.
All right, thanks. I've got a couple more pictures here. I just want to take you down memory lane about how wonderful the property looked just before I took ownership. So this house, the pictures I'm showing you there are just where the garage is that you approved, and it's in the packet that I was able to grace your presence with me for 9 months straight, I believe it was. And the biggest impediment was the people at 603 West Robinson, and now they're gone, and that house is being renovated. But I wanted to go back and doing some research. I'm looking at the survey from 2000, and the chain of title has changed hands 60 times since 1860. Rebecca Gregg, this is on page 9 of your packet. She owned it two or three times, and there was ownership in between, so it wasn't continuous 14 years. But in 1875, Walter D. Toby, who was the brother-in-law or the brother of Elizabeth Toby Bliss, bought the property for $800. And so the bird's eye view wouldn't have shown any of that because it wasn't completed till, I believe, 1876. And at that year, Walter Toby sold it for $4,000. Also, there was from the it had the same footprint from the what the 1880 and 85 or 1885 and 1890 Sanborn maps that it has now. There was an addition, I think, by 1907. In the records I looked at, there was a fire in this building. I think the proof that I have is, of course, I've crawled underneath it, and there's some charred stuff and rebuilt stuff. But it sold in 1881 for $15,000, and it sold in 1884 for $750. So I'm guessing that there must have been somebody that wanted to rebuild it, and I think that's when the front porch appeared. And the bay window was added at a different time. In the packet, and of course I'm bad, when we were doing the windows, we dug into the siding on the bay, and I need to replace that, and I do have pieces that I'm going to replace. Is all completely different from the front of the building where when I came in front of the board before to do the windows, it was a later addition, so it was similar, but quite a bit different. And so at some point in time, the siding will all come off, and I'm pretty excited. The bay window is going to look amazing with all the detail that they had. If you look up in the pictures that Susan has up there now, the rain gutters go into the soffit, and it's hand-sewn redwood lumber up there. And some of it, when they put the new cut cedar shingles on it, new, I'm guessing 30 years, I have no idea, there was a gap, and the water went in that gap, and there was a little bit shaved over. So they roofed over some of that, but not all of it. So in that picture, you can see where the flashing and everything else is. And based on that, this is going to be a condition of approval, obviously, for this. Who would you know that would be willing to do that? Because I've had six people say, oh, sure, no problem. It's the last you see them. And, of course, a project like that to have Dick Whiffley do, his bond would be far greater than the whole cost of the thing. That's been a concern, and I just want to get it fixed. And it looks like there's been some metal, sheet metal and things like that put up over the years. And, of course, when I fix it, I want to fix it completely. The roof has been repaired. There was some missing shakes and things like that, or cut cedar shingles, and East Fork Roofing did that a few months ago. And so we've got that. The other concern, or I just want to, paint on the front steps. The paint on the front steps and on the two entrances on Spear Street are all in about the same condition. Is there a way to remove the concrete off those steps? Because I think, you know, painting it, it just creates a maintenance issue consistently, continually. Or should I throw another coat of green or gray paint on there?
To answer the first question, I'll talk to you after the fact. I'll give you a couple names.
Okay.
Woodworkers or cabinet guys, like Mark LaPiccolo, those kind of guys are the kind of guys that you want up there working on that detailed woodwork. It's a repair, so there's probably no permit required, I would imagine, on something like that. And the concrete steps, when I went by and looked at those, that looks like the paint's the same thing as the foundation stuff. It's peeling off. But the steps look like they're in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm.
So that would probably be a good candidate for like a chemical removal. Get that stuff off of there, and then you can recoat it either with the paint or
the
coating materials available that okay. will seal them. In a spectrum of colors. Any questions or comments from commissioners?
Did you finish your window project?
Well, the moldings on the outside have been put on it, except there was about a 3-inch molding that went up around, and I've been researching pictures from all over the country, And I would guess that Walter Toby came out from Massachusetts, that there would be some pictures back there, but I can't find any there. But I don't know if it was a half round, if it was a round over, if it was a square piece that went up that was rounded around the edges. And we added some detail on the bottom that looks like would have been on the original building, but the same trim would go down. But I haven't been able to find a picture. And it's about a piece of 3-inch molding. And the one problem that I encountered is the original window openings without the frames weren't the same throughout the house. So all my round window weights were too big. And so I had the choice of grinding them. But what I opted to do is I took 1x2 steel and welded a half a loop of chain on there so the sash cord could be tied on it. The windows, I mean, just look a lot better. And what I found on the front porch, there's 2 or 3 different sidings that were put on there over the years. It's a little bit different, but on the front siding on some of these pictures came from Bob Gilley's house as well. So we've reused and kept some stuff alive in town. Any ideas on how to find, because the window molding itself is flush with the siding, and then they had this 3-inch strip that went up and around. Any sources that you guys have run into?
Any other comments, commissioners?
Jed, would you be happy with a 90-day time frame to make those repairs?
And then I'll get with Rob and find out, see if we can find somebody that's really, really willing to do it, not just say that they're willing to do it.
And doing those kind of window trim repairs is a good caution for anybody who's trying to restore something back to the original. It's a good idea to know what the original looked like so you know where you're going, so you don't get stuck in the middle of it trying to figure out where you need to go.
The earliest picture I have, Noreen Humphreys took it in 1957, and it was converted in 1954. So, and it had the train colors. Some of where the siding came off the front part, it was the dark, almost brown, that red that went in there. And the front porch rail was about half that height. It was real small, and I do have a piece of it that I found in the back. And what they did is they decided to cover the tongue and groove on the front porch with plywood. So I think when they did the plywood treatment, they lost the railings. And the railings were put on there because of Nevada Rural Housing subsidizes one of my tenants. So that was one of their conditions, and smoke alarms and all that kind of stuff. So.
Any other comments or questions? Any comments from the public? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I can do it. I move to approve HRC-14-041, a request from Jed Block, property owner, Spear and Phillips, for historical tax deferment on property zoned single-family 6000 located at 602 West Spear Street, APN 003-243-04, with the conditions of approval as outlined in the staff report, with the condition that they be completed within 90 days and based on the findings that the property is in general conformance with the Secretary of Interior Standards and Guidelines for Rehabilitation, Carson City Historic District Guidelines, and with Historic Resource Commission policies.
I have a second. Having a second, all those in favor signify by aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. Thank you much, Judd. And I'll concede the gavel back to you, sir.
So then just for the record, these will both go to the August 8th Board of Supervisors meeting for approval.
Okay, now to item F5. Now on to item F5. For possible action to, it's HRC-14-048, for possible action to approve a request from Jack and Sherry McLaughlin, property owners, for historic tax deferment status on property zone single family 6000 SF6 located at 611 West Robinson Street, APN 003-243-01.
Thank you. So this property is located at the corner of Robinson and Elizabeth Streets, and the applicants are applying for historic tax deferment. We did perform a site visit on June 30th and found the site to be in good condition. They meet all of the conditions required for historic tax deferment. And I'll note that while this is not a contributing structure to the district, it is a part of the historic district nomination. And so because of that, it is eligible for this. I tried to contact the applicants. I called them and left a message to give them a staff report and see if they were going to be coming to the meeting, but I did not get a return call. So we mailed the application or the staff report and the agenda to them. I don't believe that they are here tonight, and we are recommending approval.
Okay, great. Yeah, Jack and Sherry aren't here. They're probably out of town. And just for the, just so you know, they repainted their fence three weeks ago, before I went on vacation. And I think the house has been painted in the last 2 or 3 years, and the yard looks great, and they've done a good job with the upkeep, and this board approved the addition with the garage on the west side, and everything, you know, I think it's a great example of what I would hope everything in a district would look like, including my own properties. So with that said, do we have any questions of Susan? Any public comment? Seeing none, I'd like to entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve HRC 14024, a request from Jack and Cheryl McLaughlin for historic tax deferment on property zoned single family 6000 located at 611 West Robinson Street, APN 00324301, based on the findings that the property is in general conformance with the Secretary of Interior Standards and Guidelines for Rehabilitation, Carson City Historic District Guidelines, and with the Historic Resources Commission policies.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Do we have any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? None opposed. Motion carries. On to action F3, HRC 14-055. For possible action to consider a request from the Carson City Public Works Department for Historic Resources Commission approval of the proposed regional water project, uranium compliance, and three separate components that include the Douglas Costco intertie, the east-west transmission line phase 2A-1, and the replacement of aging water lines in Division Street and Sherman Lane as required for federally funded projects under Section 106 of the Nevada National Historic Preservation Act of 1966.
Thank you. So this project is being requested to come before you from the Public Works Department as a part of their environmental requirements for funding from the federal government. As the chairman had mentioned, they are required to comply with Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966. And basically what Section 106 requires is that any projects with federal funding consider potential impact on historic properties and explore measures on how those impacts may be avoided or mitigated. So the project in front of you today is the Regional Water Project for Uranium Compliance, and it has three parts: the Douglas Costco Intertie, the East-West Transmission Lane Phase 2A1, and water line replacement in Division Street and Sherman Lane. So I'm just going to briefly touch on the Douglas Costco intertie first. This project is at Vista Grande and Old Clear Creek Road down at the south end of the county, and it is already under construction in an area that's disturbed, and so SHPO had made the recommendation that no archaeological or cultural resource inventory would be necessary, nor would a monitor be necessary. So I'm not really going to focus on that piece. However, the other two phases we are going to focus on a little bit. First, on phase 2A1 of the east-west transmission line, this is a transmission line that goes from East Robinson. I may have to have you step in, David, to tell them exactly where. And For the record, David Bruchetta and Tom Grundy for Public Works are here as well to help back me up on areas that I am not 100% sure on. If you wouldn't mind just explaining the project area, that would be great.
Yes. Hi. For the record, David Bruchetta, Carson City Public Works.
Tom Grundy with Carson City Public Works.
So with this project, Phase 2A, is from Solomon Street. We currently have a pipeline, the Uranium Project, where we're bringing water from Douglas County, so we didn't have to build a uranium treatment process. So this is just a continuation of that project. And this aspect right here is from Robinson and Solomon. I was trying to think Sherman. And it's going to cut across to put water so we can distribute water to the west side of Carson City. And so the transmission line is going to be heading through Mills Park there. And then there'll be a later component of it. You see a little red dot up on the north. There's going to be a small booster pump station up there that we're going to need to build to help put water into some of the different pressure zones up in that area.
Okay. So basically what's going on here is we took a look at the Mills Park area because the line is going to go through there, and then we took a look at the Lone Mountain Cemetery area, and Commissioner Drews was nice enough to help me and put together these fantastic maps. These are actually historic aerials of the area in question, and had a lot of great background information and historical information on the area that I didn't have access to. So he provided a lot of good feedback for us on this. So what we're proposing on the transmission line that goes through Mills Park is, because the area has been significantly disturbed over several years, it was located at the east end of the V&T Railroad shops and has since been a golf course and also a park as it is today. That area is significantly disturbed, and so while SHPO had made initial recommendations that there should be some cultural study in that area, we had discussions with them about it and explained the history of the site, and they agreed that because it is a disturbed area that we didn't need to move forward with any additional studies. I'm just going to quickly go through these aerials so you can take a look and see what we're looking at. This is 1953, and you can see the blue line is the water line being proposed. And then, as David had mentioned, the pump station is up in the upper left, but I'll talk about that in a minute. This is 1967 aerial map, and you can see the blue line going through. You can see the it looks like the golf course at that point was there. And then today, the park as it exists. This is actually a 2013 aerial map. So all the area has been significantly disturbed. In the area of the cemetery, however, the initial recommendation from SHPO was that we have a study done, an archaeological study done of the area. However, in talking with Commissioner Drews and talking with SHPO, we determined that a better course of action would be to do monitoring during construction, because we could do a great job with a report and looking for potential grave sites that we think we know where the locations are, but we aren't 100% sure, and we could miss them all. So rather than require Public Works to spend a whole bunch of money to do the study, what we are proposing is that when they're going and doing the construction related to the pump station, that instead they have an archaeological monitor on site, so that if any grave sites are uncovered during that construction, then we could take the proper steps at that time. And that's based on the fact that there is pretty good documentation that there had been grave sites in that area in the past, and also when the site was built, the commercial site that is just to the south of this proposed pump station area was built, they did uncover grave sites during that construction. So we want to make sure if there are any there that we properly document and dispose as is required by SHPO. So those are the modified recommendations that staff is making on that section, and SHPO is in agreement with that. And then finally on the water lines. So there are various sections of the water lines on Sherman and also on Division that the water lines are over 50 years old. And because they are over 50 years old, then we need to take them into consideration as historic resources. So what we're recommending is that during construction and prior to removal of the lines, anywhere that we've determined where they're 50 years old or more, that they be properly documented, and that can be accomplished by executing a memorandum of agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office that would tell them exactly how they would move forward with documenting the water lines before they replace them. That concludes my portion of the presentation, and Tom and David, you're welcome to add anything if I've missed it, but we are recommending approval of what they've proposed for construction.
You guys want to add anything?
Well said.
All right, any commissioner questions?
Susan, do we have the sample MOA from SHPO yet?
No, they have not provided it to me yet, but I have asked for it. I will ask them again.
Do you have any idea what the 1950s water line is made out of?
We don't. We don't know offhand. I don't know what the old water lines are made out of. I could probably check our records that are reasonably accurate and let you know what that is.
I just wondered in the recording process if you knew the material type that might have some bearing on how you recorded it.
I haven't seen the MOA either, but SHPO brought it up to us. Evidently, they use it all the time down in Las Vegas for similar or water and sewer line replacements. And I think what the process is just doing sample recordings at different parts of the line and things like that. It's more documentation and mitigation than anything else. Just so there's a record of what was there. Public Works has also talked about some different methods of replacement, which could be really interesting. Some of them are put new line through the old line or just bore it out and things like that. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what we come up with, what construction techniques are used, and what SHPO wants for the MOA.
I guess it's also possible you could run into some other archaeological sites while you're excavating that line too, so it's always good to have some backup for recording that kind of information.
We do. There's always a possibility, no matter where we work in Carson City, that we'll find things. And what we have in our general conditions that goes into every construction contract is language that says state and federal laws pertaining to the protection and preservation of sites of or objects of archaeological, paleontological, and historical interest shall be observed. And the contract requires that if they find any artifacts like that, they stop work completely, notify SHPO, and then notify the construction manager. And that goes in every contract.
For the commission's information, the way the Environmental Protection Agency, who's the federal funding agency for this, works is different from most federal agencies. They hand over their cultural resources Section 106 responsibilities to NDEP. If this had gone through the process the way most federal actions go, a cultural resource inventory would have been done, even if it was just a background search. And all these issues would have been looked at, recommendations would have been come up, or would have been made. It would have been submitted to SHPO. They would have reviewed it. SHPO is asking now that any 106 actions within Carson City come before us. So SHPO would have reviewed it, concurred with the recommendations. We could have reviewed that report and done the same thing. The way this was set up, NDEP sent a letter to SHPO and said, here we go. We don't think there's any issues. SHPO had to do all the background work. They don't have the time or the real level of expertise to go into these in detail. That's why things like, you know, surveying the cemetery in Mills Park came up, because it's open space, there's a potential, and without real thought, they made some recommendations. When we saw those, Susan sent them to me first, and I thought this is kind of ridiculous. In the future, Public Works is now aware of how the process should go. Parks and Recreation does the same thing with their grants now. They'll go ahead and hire a cultural resources person to do these overviews and inventories first, so that those reports can be submitted to the federal agencies. It can then be reviewed by SHPO, can then come to us as a whole package so that the staff doesn't have to prepare the report. One of the issues that SHPO had, or one of the requests that they made, is that they get our packet so that they can review how we've approached these issues and come up with our recommendations. So in the future, I think it'll be a whole lot simpler for us to review, for SHPO to review, and everybody will be on the same page instead of us having to look at SHPO's recommendations and counter them somewhat and modify them and go back and forth. So it should save time down the road.
Okay, great. Any more? Thank you for that information. Any other commissioner comments? Any public comment? Mr. Brunneman? All right, seeing no public comment, I'd like to entertain a motion.
I move to approve HRC-14-055, a request from the Carson City Public Works Department for the Regional Water Plan uranium compliance with three separate components that include the Douglas Costco intertie, the east-west transmission line phase 2A-1, and the replacement of aging water lines in Division Street and Sherman Lane based on the findings and conditions of approval outlined in the staff report as required by federally funded projects under Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966 and consistent with Chapter 18.06 of the Carson City Municipal Code and with Historic Resources Commission policies.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Do we have any comment on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing, seeing none, motion carries. On to item F7, HR313-131, discussion only regarding an update on the 2014 Historic Preservation Fund grant and future Historic Preservation Fund grant applications. Susan.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's about that time of year again when we start talking about the next grant, but before I do that, I'm just going to give a quick update on our current grant, the 2014 Historic Preservation Fund grant. As you're aware, we received $15,500 from National Park Service through SHPO for the data collection and inventory of in support of the National Register of Historic Places nomination for the prison. So we have received the fund. Let me back up. The board has approved to accept the funding. The RFP is currently being reviewed at the finance department, and I hope to have that out of finance quickly. And I'd like to have our consultant under contract as quickly as possible, and I'm shooting for August 1st, although I'm not certain at this point if I'm going to make that or not. But given the fact that our nomination needs to be submitted in October, for review by the board in December, the sooner I get them on board, the better off we are. So that's basically the update there. And before I move on, any questions on the 2014 grant? Comments? No? Okay.
When do you expect the data? When do you expect to send out a notice to the potential consultants?
I'm hoping that I'll be able to do it by the end of July. I want the RFP to go out by the end of July so that I can get the RFPs back by the middle of August. I'm sorry, not the end of July. Next week would be nice. You're right, we're getting a little bit close to August 1st. Time is kind of starting to get away from me. As soon as I have it back and can approve it, then we will send the notice out immediately. I know that doesn't really answer.
Thanks for the date.
I know. I'm shooting for August 1st to have it all wrapped up, but now that we're at July 10th, I don't know how well that's going to work. So we'll say that August 1st, at the very least, I should be able to notify the applicants or the potential consultants that would be responding to the RFP.
Thanks, Susan. And for the record, this really isn't the city's fault. The award took forever to be announced, and we were looking at March, and CHPO didn't get back to us until June. So the city is trying to do the best it can to get this thing out.
So now we need to start talking about 2015. And so I just thought I would put the bug in everyone's ear so we could start discussing it. Last year, the items that we had discussed were Anderson and Perini, and those had kind of been on the list. They have been on the list for a little while and were pushed because we wanted to finish the Kings Canyon stuff. Now Kings Canyon has been pushed because we changed the project for the Nevada State Prison. So the question is, how do we want to move forward with that? And I think that it's a good idea to leave all of these on the list, Anderson and Perini being the first one, and then the Kings Canyon inventory that we had originally applied for and received funding for. And then the Kings Canyon Road National Register nomination, also a good one to leave on there. And then I would like to suggest, as a member of the Nevada State Prison Steering Committee, that we also consider a historic structures report for the prison as a follow-up to the nomination. So this is kind of an opportunity for you as the board to discuss amongst yourselves what we might want to put on the list to vote on, probably at the September meeting, because the applications will be due again in, I believe, December. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
I think adding the historic structures report for the Nevada State Prison would be a good addition, especially with the preservation group out there wanting to get things started. It would be real helpful to have the historic structures report for anything that they want to do out there.
I'll start lobbying for that right now, too. There's a lot of Luann's right. The Preservation Society is really interested in this. There's a lot of interest from CHPO. There's some momentum in the legislature to get this thing moving. It'd be a real nice, be a great next step for that property, because it will help state lands and the Department of Corrections with a roadmap for preservation of that thing. So it's something that needs to get done regardless. I think we have a real good chance of getting it funded, at least partially by CHPO. So I'll start my lobbying right now for our September meeting.
I also think a historic structures report, because it's going to give us a lot of history and everything else with that, and the preservation group could use any helping hand that we could do for them. I think that would be great as well.
Do we ask for money sometimes for several of these things, or we just prioritize the top one, and that's what goes forward?
I don't think we've ever asked for several before. One of the issues may be, and I know other CLGs do ask for multiple ones, the pot kind of gets, there's a pot of money that Park Service gives CHPO for these, and they try to allocate funds where they think they go best. I kind of hate to split our projects, because what generally happens is they'll cut your funding. So you may get both projects, but you won't really have the funds necessary to complete either one. So it's I think it's a better strategy to go in strong on one and hopefully can convince them to fund it.
I think it's also kind of an involved process getting the funding and the contract and the paperwork and everything, whereas if you had multiple ones to work on, it would be, I think, a little bit daunting for staff. It's a nice thing to have these grants, but it's also a lot of work. So I think
Right. And, you know, I mean, if it's the pleasure of the board for us to do more than one, we're happy to do it. There, of course, is a process involved, but we would consider it if you wanted to move that way, of course.
While we're in the motion of lobbying here, I'm going to lobby for the Kings County Cultural Resource Inventory, mainly because after the fire up there in the canyon, I knew that those structures existed, but I didn't know to what extent. And after the fire, you could walk around and see them clearly. And there's a good five or six stone structures still in place. And that gives you an idea of how substantial the area was as far as the trafficking and the expansion of the west out through this one little slot in our town here. And it's still there, and it's being overgrown as we speak. And I'd like to be able to go up and just burn a couple little areas just to clear them off again, you know. There was only a certain amount of time you had to take pictures quick, and then 6 months later it was overgrown again. But I'm lobbying it heavily because it's something that we nixed off the map last year, and I think it needs to be back on a priority.
That brings up my question, though, again, if you put two things forward. Is it not possible to say, this is our number one priority, here's how much we think we need to make this go, number one priority, and if there's any more money in the bucket, here's our number two priority, you know, but to not end up watering down number one because you've submitted two things.
The fear is, even with the previous Kings Canyon survey that we did, I think we got half of what we asked for. We had to really scramble to get that project done. There is a match as well. And what it means is somebody has to make up the difference in cost. So we could put two in, but if we end up with half of one and a quarter of our budget for the other, we may have to turn it back to SHPO and say, sorry, we can't do this for that, and then they have to reallocate funds.
Is it possible to take these projects and in and of themselves phase them? In other words, this Kings Canyon project could be done the north side of the road 1 year and the south side of the road the second year. I mean, they're not something that's walking away. It's something that could be continuously picked at if it was broken into. You know, if we only got a fourth of the funding that year, we could still spend that money on that project to keep it moving forward, giving us, of course, the next year more reason to need more money to keep it moving.
By dividing it up, you're increasing costs because reports have to be written, and we could try to put together a phased project. The problem is you don't know if the subsequent phases will get funded at all. I mean, the money could dry up in a minute. 2 years ago, it was, I think SHPO got half the money that they hoped for, and they had, I think they funded eight different projects across the state. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a crapshoot that way.
I ask that because in our past experience, like you said, we asked for, let's say we asked for $20,000 for something, we ended up getting $14,000. But it would behoove us to understand that ahead of time and pad our application so that it used to be like when I was doing architecture for Roger Shaheen. I'd design a nice building with all kinds of frou-frou, knowing that he would want to strip neat stuff off, so I would design stuff on purposely for it to be lost. Is that something we cannot do in our, you know, our grants? I mean, let's go for biting off the apple but settle for the berry.
And we actually did do that on the Kings Canyon. We asked for more than what we thought it would cost, knowing that we were going to get less.
If we have it strategized to understand that maybe we can accomplish these things in two or three phases rather than one phase and not necessarily have a lot of duplicate. I mean, it's only a mile up the road, so I can't imagine there'd be a lot of duplicate costs.
I think it would be a good strategy to do what Greg said, like have our primary one and then have this other one that's maybe phased and just be a little bit of money, and maybe if somebody else kicks them back or they have a little bit left over and they want to, you know, keep us moving in that direction, I think that would be a real smart thing for us to do, just to have something else out there that if they had some money left over.
And one of the advantages we have is the Kings Canyon is written. I mean, it's there's not a whole lot of work that needs to go back into that if we want to submit too. But you have to remember, too, that in the early 80s, we were the CLG in Carson. We could put in for anything we wanted, and we would be funded. Now there's four others that we have to compete with, and there's also other, it's not just CLG, the Nevada Rock Art Foundation and other cultural groups put in for these funds, so it's a little bit tough. One of the things I wanted to bring up, too, is on the existing prison inventory, there's a significant match that's needed there, and with the funding we have, we're going to need some help for recording some of the buildings and things here and helping out with the documentation. So we could use some volunteer help, track your hours, and it'll certainly help our match.
And we can coordinate that as we move forward once we get the consultant under contract and get direction on exactly what we as volunteers, or you as volunteers and I as staff, should do.
I guess that was F7 and G. Again, did G, do you have any other staff reports?
Actually, you know, I had a very nice thank you card that was sent to us that it must have dropped out of the pile of stuff when I was putting it in, but it was from a very nice woman that she and her grandson had done the scavenger hunt. And I'll make sure that I copy it and I email it to all of you, but she just thanked everyone for putting it together and said how wonderful it was that she and her grandson got to do it together, and this is the second year that they did it, and I believe that he won for the youth portion of it. I don't remember if she said that she had won for the adult portion or not, but anyway, so just kudos to the board and to Greg in particular for putting that together for us.
A lot of thanks to Janice as well, though, in your office.
I'll let her know. She's actually getting married on Saturday, so yeah. So she's off for a couple days. The other thing that I wanted to mention is, I know it's a little bit last minute, but I have signed up for a webinar on historic rehabilitation tax credits. It's on the 16th, Wednesday the 16th at 10 o'clock. We're going to host it at my office in Conference Room B on the first floor. It's actually July, so it's next week.
You sent us an email on that already, right?
I haven't. I just got approval for it today, and we just signed up for it today. So the title of the webinar is Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credits, Using Tax Incentives to Develop and Invest in Historic Properties, with a focus on the recent IRS Safe Harbor guidance. So, again, July 16th at 10 o'clock at my office. If you're able to attend, great. And if not, any materials I can get from the webinar, I absolutely will pass along. And I apologize for the late notice.
Will you send an email out to SHPO for that, too?
That's all I have.
Okay, do we have any commissioner reports or comments? Right now, the city's taking down a tree at 603 West Robinson that was split, the old Spears property. And then it's my understanding that they're going to take down four or five black walnuts next to the Posey Bender house. You go up on the left-hand side, headed west on Robinson, the left-hand side. One of the locusts, they're all split. A big chunk fell off one. It was probably 12 inches diameter. Hit the cap off of the chimney, hit the rain gutter, missed the fence. One of them is bolted together. There's a couple pieces of thread all through a couple of the other ones. And, you know, when we lose trees like that, should we be involved in trying to replace them? Is that something that the historic resources would be purview to? Or
I think it.
I'm sure the Shade Tree Council would love to have us join them in supporting it.
And maybe that's something we could talk about in the future agenda, because I'm sure they have as much money as we do.
There's no money, but there is, I think there is a list of compatible trees specifically for the historic district.
Okay. There is, and so are you suggesting that the commission make recommendations on the type of tree that's put back in its place, or whether or not to remove the trees to begin with, or what are you thinking there?
Well, this to just replacement, because the city's going to remove them because of liability, on the right of way. Is that something that we even want to get involved in, or is it the? My understanding is the property line goes to the curb. It's just the right-of-way goes over into the property. So the city still has right-of-way, but you're still, that's my understanding, that you're still responsible to the curb as a property owner, even though
Actually, I think the responsibility is just maintenance, not necessarily planting or implementing.
Wouldn't the planting, because I used to have the street tree program, which is on hold right now, that property owners could do, and that would go into city right-of-way. So I don't know if that's something even key.
Yeah, I don't think that we as the city don't necessarily, we can't require that trees be planted. We can on commercial properties that are coming before us, but in residential, we can't require it. But in properties that exist that have landscaping in the right-of-way, it is the responsibility of property owner to maintain it, so for what that's worth.
Okay, and another thing, over at on the corner of Robinson and Minnesota Street, the northeast corner, a little blue house, Brenda Dahlquist, that's a realtor, bought it. I reached out to her and told her that the Historic Resources Commission was here to help. That if she did anything to the outer appearance of the house, including replacing windows, things like that, that would need to come through to us, and that there was a lot of expertise on this board. And so I reached out to her on that, and her comment was, well, I love the windows. I don't want to change those. I think she's gone in and sanded floors and done some painting, and she's moved in. I think she's moved in already. And the significant thing that disappeared was there was an old clothesline back there. And the picture that she had posted had a three-inch pipe, I think the thing was about 36 by 12 by 2 feet deep. I mean, it was just massive. But anyway, she also butts up to Alex Tersh's place. So I think I haven't been by to see it since I've been gone, but I think she's put some significant time and effort into it.
I do have one additional item I just wanted to bring up, and that's to do with the conditions of the sidewalk along the blue line in that area. Who oversees that? Is that something we push and the city has to maintain, or how's that all work?
I'm not 100% certain. I know that the streets department is aware of what the material is and has given that information to people when they've needed to replace it as part of improvement projects. But as far as, is there an ongoing maintenance program that is supposed to be happening? I don't know, but I will find out.
Because the question is kind of twofold. One, from a liability standpoint, I mean, there's trippers from, but also some of that sidewalk is historic in itself. Some of that sidewalk's 100 years old. And is that something, do we want replaced, or is there a way to take it up and lay it back down so you get rid of the bump or the heaving or whatever like that? I mean, how are we addressing that? Sidewalks.
For sidewalk replacement, it's my understanding that most of the historic sidewalk is very, very thin. And so in my encounters with replacing sidewalk in the district, the streets department, it is their responsibility to do it, but they replace it with standard sidewalk that is, modern, up to date, basically.
Well, I think on most of the sidewalks in the historic district, there was no compaction, there was no whackers, vibratory plates. And so it's basically topsoil, but there's about probably half of it is a concrete substance of some sort, which was their base. And then the last two inches is like the firm concrete. Yeah, yeah. So you can see in some of the areas it heaves up, but Justin Tierney is going to be in charge of that, and I've got to call out to him. Because in some of the historic district areas, I just want to find out how they schedule this stuff, because if you look at the house on Robinson and Division, the northwest corner, there's a big old heave in that thing, and I don't know if
that's why I noticed it on Halloween when we were walking around there. Kids tripped on a couple of them.
Well, you should see it after our earthquake the other day. That's kind of high. And the rationale, because I know behind the West Side Poorhouse they're redoing concrete there, that in comparison to other areas in the district was great.
Yeah.
But like you talk about at 603 West Robinson, Jim Warren's place, in the concrete on the corner, right where that corner would have been, says Morton 1910. If you go behind across from the trial lawyers at 412 North Nevada Street, kind of in between there where between the Cactus Jack's parking lot, there's kind of a jog. The sidewalk in there has Morton 1909 in it. I mean, so there are some significant pieces, and maybe when things like that are replaced, there's some way to save it, because you're looking at a piece that's probably, you know, a foot long, 6 inches wide, and 2 inches thick.
More importantly, how they replace it, because that's my biggest fear, is having a section that needs to be fixed because of a trip hazard or something like that, and coming along the next day and finding a brand new, odd-colored, gray, modern sidewalk in a place where there was a 100-year-old sidewalk. And that, you know, my question was, is there anything in the following of who follows that to make sure these things are done reasonably in the district?
I'll talk with Streets about that. I'm not certain if they have ever had discussions with the commission in the past about properly replacing sidewalk or not, but I'll talk with them about it.
And my understanding is they come in and they pour the slab and they'll do the expansion joints wherever they need to, but they don't do the troweling on the side where you get the kind of the cross patterns and stuff like that. That I think that's more of what you're talking about than that as well. Any other? Great.
Might there be any publications from the National Park Service that covers things like this? They certainly do a lot of things about historic preservation and what to do about this and that and the other thing. But
I'll be online tomorrow looking at that.
Okay. Let me know.
Susan, is there any progress, or do you know anything more about the Methodist Church and all that project that we approved? Have they started that on that yet, or?
They did, I believe, just obtain a building permit for the sidewalk, the pathway replacements and the planter repairs and the stairway replacement. And then they're doing, they added some railing to the stairway that Vice Chair Darney approved administratively for me in your absence. I don't believe that this permit included the removal of the structure between the garage and the main building. So I think that they're probably waiting to do that with another permit.
Cool. Any future agenda items?
I'll just mention that Herman Bauer will be coming back before you in either August or September. With a modification on his project, he's going to be going before the Planning Commission at the end of July. And this is a modification to propose the 8 units that he had originally proposed. However, with structural differences, he actually is proposing to do the 4 the units within the structure that was approved by the Historic Resources Commission originally. So from Historic Resources standpoint, my assumption is that what you'll be looking at on this project is going to be possibly the addition of 1 or 2 doors on the structure as it was currently was originally approved, and also some site work to accommodate some additional parking. But that'll be before you, like I said, in either August or September, and I encourage you to watch the Planning Commission meeting to see how that goes as well. But that's the only one I know of. Oh, and the other one is the Public Works Department will be back in front of you again in either August or September as well for a similar project, similar situation to what we had with the water today, except for a sewer project. And they had some additional work that they needed to do before they could come before you, and we made some recommendations, and they'll be back in front of you shortly. That's all I have.
Great. Any other comments, Commissioner comments? On to item H, public comment. Mr. Brenneman, would you like to?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but I guess I'll have to. With Bauer coming back to the forefront with an 8-unit monstrosity,
He had better follow every aspect of the building code in terms of snow removal, parking.
Don't forget to say your name for the record, Steve. Thanks.
Well, I was introduced, I thought, but my name is Stephen Brenneman. I live at 608 Elizabeth Street. Anyway, does anyone remember when Bauer's permission to build the fourplex that was finally approved expires? It's coming up pretty soon, isn't it?
I can't. What is the time on that? Because it's been
2 years.
It's been close to 2 years.
I think it's more than 2 years, actually.
So I'll take a look.
Yeah,
I will. Thank you for reminding me of that.
But, you know, it's just going to re-energize the community because he's encroaching again on the historic district with a structure that's completely out of character.
And so I've had several conversations with him about it, and, you know, this is a little out of character for public comment, but he is aware that he will be facing the same surrounding property owners as
we had obtained over 130 signatures opposing his property.
I'd encourage you guys and anyone who's interested to get to the planning commission because it'll go to them first this time.
Okay.
And that's where I mean, we can't deal with Denton. I mean, we have to deal with the architecture.
I understand.
And if we want to make a stand, the planning commission is where you make it.
Well, the way we beat it back the last time with the board of supervisors was to point out the violations of building code that he was trying to sail through the planning commission. And I don't think the Planning Commission had done their job as efficiently or as thoroughly as they should have done in terms of enforcing the building codes. So I can guarantee you we're going to be looking with an eagle eye at the building code and what he's trying to do on that half-acre property. Thank you.
When's the Planning Commission meeting?
July 30th.
July 30th? Okay, so if anybody wants to, July 30th, so.
Probably timing it to conflict with hot August nights so we get the most reduced attendance possible.
Oh, we have an NV-150 fair going on at the same time. But, rally the troops and see what you can do.
I figured that's why you were here, Steve.
No, I had no idea.
I know I used to sit in the audience as well. That happened to me quite frequently. Anyway, item I, action adjournment. Motion and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. We're adjourned.
It's dinner time.